Hello, everyone, and welcome to One Control Report Podcast, episode 347. My name is Benjamin Yoder. I'm here today to talk to you about video games. I also, yesterday, I walked into a pole, like, full force and smashed my nose, and that, it looks fine. It's got a little cut, but my nose feels bad. So we'll find out if that is a concern of greater value than just, hey, waiting for it to heal. If I sound a little weird today, sorry about that. My nose seems and feels fine, but it just feels weird. So I think my brain is subconscious. That's gonna make me sound weird too. So anyways, this week we're gonna talk about Level Up Expo. That happened, so we'll get into that this week. That's a local video game convention here in Las Vegas. A little bit more video game than previous years, I feel like. Could be wrong about that, but or maybe just more things of interest to me. Also, we got some news stories, mostly of the financial kind of layer here. We don't really have a lot of news stories about any particular announcements or anything like that. So we're going to get into that. That'll probably be last, actually. I'll probably save the news stories for last. And then also, if you are not aware, do you follow me on the hit video game conversing website, x.com, Twitter.com? Actually, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever typed in x.com yet. Does x.com take you to X? I assume that would be desirable on their side. But anyways, I've been asking some questions on Twitter recently, so I want to just talk about some of those or all of them. I don't know. It depends on how long things go and how much I talk about them. So I just want to kind of talk about those things because my relationship with Twitter has changed a bit more recently as well. So we'll get into that too. So anyways, just as a quick rundown before we get too deep into things, I've been trying to have a better idea of what's coming out and when, because I am now at the point where I have actual content coming out again. On a fairly regular basis. Whether that stays true is kind of another thing, but I mostly have stuff planned every week for a while. And it's not me trying to do the whole previous thing of like, I need content available for you guys every week kind of thing. That was the previous problem with that. Or like, I don't feel like there's an expectation that I need to post content every week, but I've just been doing a lot of things, and occasionally I'm just willing to turn a camera on when I do it. Or I'm just like, you know, here's some podcast thoughts I wanted to edit some gameplay footage to and things like that. And I'm trying to just schedule it out, just as it makes sense kind of thing. But anyways, that aside, if you didn't see the last week, the PCFX Fan Club podcast came out. We actually talked about, it was actually with Vink from Famicom Dojo. And you know, you guys are probably more familiar with Japan Retro Direct, which is where I go import a lot of my games. We talked about like the aftermarket of the PCFX in Japan and how that's evolved over the last 20 years. So that's an interesting show. So go check that out if you want a podcast right after this podcast. And then also, I think my gaming junk repair pile video went up. So if you want to go listen to me as I poke at game consoles with little plastic spatulas and stuff to try to clean it, put rubbing alcohol on things that I'm not sure if rubbing alcohol is okay to go on, then you can check that out. In the next couple weeks coming up here, I have Star Fox Adventures. There's a podcast clip for that going up. And then also cleaning my PSP as well. That's also in there. So that is actually technically part of the same video as the gaming junk pile repair thing, but I split it into two because I spent way too much time cleaning a GBASP in the first one. So anyways, but probably more importantly, what will get us into our today's episode this week is that what also went up on the channel is my Xeno panel talking about the Xeno series, specifically an introductory to the Xeno series. So if you don't know, I submitted this panel to Level Up Expo. I had kind of a wishy-washy weird last couple months for a lot of reasons. You know, I've mentioned multiple times that I'm kind of reorganizing my life and stuff like that. And because of some of that stuff, it made it hard for me to sit down and concentrate on the Xeno panel. And so it kind of came together fairly last minute. But what this panel was intended to do was it was intended to kind of just lower the barrier to entry for Xeno. Because, like, every time I talk to people about Xeno, what happens is people go, hey, that's a complicated series, right? Do I need to play the old ones from 20 years ago to understand it? Like, because all of them are connected, right? All the universe stuff is connected. And, you know, you could probably can sit there and connect some Easter eggs and things like that if you really care, but the answer is no. No, these are not connected. No, none of these really matter. For the average person, none of this really matters. So you should sit down and kind of focus on the game you want to play. So that was kind of part of it. And then also just saying like, well, let's give some examples like what these games are like and you know, help kind of attach people to a game kind of thing. I called it in the panel, like very last minute, I was like, oh, like it's kind of like Xeno speed dating, trying to find the Xeno game that's right for you. So it went okay. It was a very informal panel. I just kind of went up stage and kind of rambled about each game individually, and I didn't really have slides prepared or even my own footage, so I just kind of ran with trailers on the from the internet on there just so people had some kind of visual reference for what was going on. I think it went okay. It's one of those things that, like, yeah, it was a lot more casual, but it was just me kind of running through like 12 games very quickly, and I don't know how digestible that was for most people. So if you watch the panel on YouTube, let me know. I'd be curious to know what your thoughts are, if you have any thoughts on that. My only real beef with it is I do this thing, like, I go, like, sometimes when I'm in situations where I'm nervous, I will go back to old habits, right? And so I will go back to something that, like, oh, I'm going to say this about this franchise or say this about this fan base. And I know that I don't want to say that. And if I were to sit down and think about it for even a second, I would not say that. But because it's like off the cuff, my brain just pulls out like, oh, I'm going to like kind of poke fun at the Xeno fan base here real quick about this particular thing. And I don't want to do that really, especially in that kind of environment. I don't want to like encourage that kind of response to Xeno fans and Xeno games. So there's a few times in the panel you might notice that I say like some stuff about that and like maybe laugh nervously or like kind of try to walk it back suddenly. And I just don't like that I did that. I left it in just because it would be kind of awkward to cut out for that. But yeah, it was just one of those things that it just kind of not ideal for me, but I understand like that, like that is something that I typically do. And I mean, you guys hear it on this podcast a lot of times where I'll talk about something and then like suddenly be like, oh, I don't know how true this is. And then really start to question myself like on the podcast. But you know, when it's a panel, I have like a specific direction, a specific time period I got to fit it into and stuff like that. So anyways, all that stuff I mentioned earlier is on the OCP Plus channel. At some point I need to rebrand the OCP Plus channel. I'm thinking I might just move back to like Oculian's box. Oculian's box, which is like my old WordPress site kind of thing. I just want to make it more clear because I even had it the other day that somebody was like, oh, is that on, which channel is that on again? I'm like, the Oculian WordPress channel. I was like, is that different from the main one? I'm like, yes, that's different. So I think that naming is wrong. Like that whole split, if I were to go back and do it again, I think what I would probably do, because I was like really worried about holding on to like my 1,000 subscribers, which at the end of the day, you know, what does that really matter? I think if I were to redo that whole thing, I would go back and basically make the feature video YouTube stuff be the main, like that would have been the new channel. And then the old channel I would have repurposed into just the junk channel, because now it's like split up in weird ways and I don't like that. But it's kind of too late for me to go back on it without just messing it up even more. So we'll see. Maybe someday I'll figure that stuff out. But I have not been thinking about YouTube success in a while now. So, you know, I'm just kind of dealing with what I left myself with last time. There's probably room to make an argument that like, hey, a new YouTube channel would make sense, but I want to really make sure it made sense. And like, I had a very, very clear goal of what I wanted to do with that channel before I were to abandon one of the One Control Board channels. So anyways, what am I thinking? So yeah, that panel happened and that went on. So there were a few video game panels at Level Up Expo. If you don't know, historically, I've been going to Level Up Expo, I think regularly the last 3 to 4 years. I also went back in 2017 as well, but I was pretty unhappy about it. The biggest challenge with it was that I really didn't feel like it was very video game focused, very anime focused. And today, Level Up Expo is definitely more of a general culture kind of convention. So video games, I would say largely outside of like the merch, is kind of not really the focus of it. When you go to panels and stuff, well, it depends on what you want out of it, right? Like, so voice actors, I think this is a very like US convention common thing. Voice actors play a huge role at these conventions and stuff. But I think, you know, actually talking about video games, I don't know. Like, I guess the question is like, what is a video game convention? What is the goal of a video game convention? And like, A, bringing people together around video games, right? Okay. It probably does that. B, is it a celebration of games? We could say that. Or C, is it educational about games, right? And I think I want it to be C, right? But I think I have a harder time appreciating A and B. A, because I don't talk to people nearly as much as I'd like at conventions. And B, because I think the things I'm looking for in video games usually is not, hey, you know, I want some Genshin Impact art, right? Which, I mean, I love that people do that. I love Artist Alley and stuff like that. I think that stuff's all great. But, you know, I think my thought is, like, maybe I want something a little more educational. But I think that's at odds when I go to, like, conventions in Japan, like the little small-scale ones that are, like, Tengai Makyo and stuff. And it's, like, I really appreciate that this is a very small franchise that's getting, like, a lot of love, and it's a very small scale kind of thing, right? So I think there is, like, some kind of separation of, like, what I want out of a convention in, like, the English market versus, like, what I kind of idolize about those little tiny Japanese get-togethers and stuff where people get together around, like, very small games and stuff. There's a Super Comic City, the Otoko Doll fan base got together and did a lot of amazing art and stuff around that. I was really jealous. I really wanted to go. If I did my trip this year instead of last year, it would have overlapped. Although I think last year I left before Golden Week was happening, or this year it happened during Golden Week. But yeah, they had a whole little event stuff and a whole get together thing. I would love to go to a Otoko Doll event in person at some point, but we'll see. I haven't been to the online ones in a while, but part of that is because whenever I go on Pick Square, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to buy a bunch of stuff and then ship it and all that stuff. So it's expensive to do that. So although I might try to coordinate around. So I need to buy some Love and Berry cards at some point. So I might try to coordinate that around when a Otoko Doll event happens, so I can kind of bundle all that stuff together and ship it back all in one go kind of thing. So there were two other panels I was looking at there. One was hip hop and gaming culture, basically where hip hop and gaming kind of crossover. It sounded really interesting. Unfortunately, the panel was canceled, so it didn't happen. My panel almost got canceled because there's no projector in my room, and I was like, I can't really do this. I mean, it'd be really weird for me to just talk about 12 video games without any visual aid kind of thing. And the other one, and unfortunately I got to it really late, is the Evolution of Fighting Games panel. And what was probably more interesting about this one is not so much the topic. Like, I was going just because, like, I've been talking about fighting games recently. I was like, maybe I'll learn something. I got there pretty much at the end, I think. But it was more of a discussion kind of thing happening at that time, and people were talking about individual games and things like that. So it was an interesting kind of place where, you know, people were basically just kind of talking throughout the group kind of thing in this panel room. And that's something I haven't really done at a panel, is like having a discussion based panel. All my panels are very much like, hey, I'm gonna go and blab words at you for an hour, please enjoy. And I wonder sometimes, like, I think fighting games have a very clear draw, and so that kind of draws people in. But I wonder sometimes if I could do something that's more along the lines of, like, you know, people be able to bring, like, a game that they like that's underrated or was kind of unfairly maligned or maybe obscure and stuff, and do some kind of panel discussion about that stuff so everyone could kind of come up and do a show and tell. But I think what would have to happen is, because I wouldn't be able to tell who would actually show up, right? I would probably need to have just my own show and tell ready to go if nobody really showed up or nobody really volunteered, and be like, okay, this is what's going to happen. If nobody's going to come in here and say stuff, I'm just going to blab for an hour. So I think as long as I have that planned as a backup. But I don't know, maybe it'd be nice to, like, get a conversation going with somebody during one of the panels. There's somebody that was really nice trying to talk about Xenogears on my panel, but I had to, because my panel got delayed due to the projector stuff, I had to kind of, like, shove him out to the side for a second, like, hey, I really appreciate it, I need to keep this panel moving, but I appreciate it. I felt really bad because he was really interested in talking about Xenogears, and he was offering a lot more insight than I could on Xenogears, because I don't know anything about Xenogears. So there were some games there as well. I really like looking at games at these kind of events where the actual video game section is a bit smaller. In some ways, I'm like, I wish video games were more of a focus. But when it comes to, like, actually new video games that you can demo, I like it on this, like, smaller section kind of thing. Although if I were going for multiple days, I only went on Friday this year, maybe I would feel differently. But if there's, like, a larger section for new games. But there basically were about five to 10 games. But I mostly sat down with five of them. Well, one of them I didn't really sit down with, Pizza Bandit. If you remember from PAX last year, I played Pizza Bandit. It's a time-traveling pizza delivery game that's a third-person shooter. I thought it was really cool. I really enjoyed it. I won the contest on accident, and I could not hear anyone in that center. It was so loud at PAX, so I had no idea what was happening, but people, like, were telling me to click on things. So I was, like, clicking these buttons, And apparently I won a prize from it, and I got a Pizza Bandit shirt. So anytime I open my closet, I'm thinking about that Pizza Bandit. So this was a lot quieter of an event, so I was able to talk to these guys a bit more, get more insight in what they're doing. Not a lot to say about it. It's just kind of like a run-based third-person shooter. I think if you haven't seen it before, The Club... The hit video game that everybody knows, The Club from Sega on PC. I need to play that game eventually. It kind of reminds me of that, where it's like this kind of arcadey kind of run through kind of thing of a third person shooter. He said there's going to be some kind of multiplayer co-op, but they're not 100% sure when that will be out. I think they said it wasn't going to be there at launch, but I could be wrong about that. This is all in my memory. Sorry. But I think they're going to try to launch, I think it was early next year, for real. So if I can think about it, I do want to check it out. I have a problem where I often don't follow up on Steam games specifically. And I really would like to get that kind of library, the Steam library, a little bit more engaged in my gaming life a bit more. I think in general, there's a lot of platforms I'm looking at, like PSP, Vita, and things like that, where I always complain about I don't check out games within this space nearly enough. And I don't think I'm in a situation where, like, I'm going to be able to just drop everything and go play a bunch of Steam games, right? But I do want to at least be actively engaged with them on a regular basis, in the same way I'm actively engaged with the Nintendo DS, the Wii, all that stuff, right? And I think I want to diversify more in that regard, so... that's something I want to try to do. So Pizza Bandit, I think, will be a game I will buy and play. Another game was Gunmetal Gothic. This is interesting. It's an online 4-player co-op third-person shooter, but it's not a shooter in the sense of, like, it's, how do you put it? It's definitely a shooter. It plays like a third-person shooter, all that stuff. You have a gun, you have a cursor, you have full mouse movement or some controller movement or whatever. If you're on a controller, I forget what I was playing with. And it's got like a PS1 aesthetic. It's got almost like a vaguely Castlevania 64 look to it. Somewhere between like Castlevania 64, maybe like Vampire Hunter D on the PlayStation or something like that. So I think that kind of Castlevania gothic aesthetic kind of thing, right? And it's a very slow moving game. Everything moves really slow, the shooting, the fire rate, everything. And I really respect him keeping that, because it sounds like he didn't really get complaints about it, but he got a lot of people noting it, but people seem to like it. And I think there's a lot, whenever you make your controls slower, I think there's a lot of fear that people are just going to get upset at you for how your game plays. And I think one thing that is nice, and this is kind of like, he has that PS1 aesthetic, like, so low resolution pixels and things like that, low polygon models. I think that helps give the expectation of what to expect out of that game. Like, the visuals align with the controls of that game in a way that I think works really well. It is basically like two kind of core skills you have. One is your gun, so you shoot things. Then you also have like a magic spell. There's some UI elements that I think probably could use some work to basically better clarify what's happening there, because, like, basically when you have your magic, there's like a number that says you have like 5 casts is what it looks like. So I think in my brain, I'm like, I'm going to try to hold on to this, but no, the 5 casts recharge over time. So you basically want to use magic and ammo kind of interchangeably. And I think in a lot of ways, you have to, like, right now it's like kind of like switch between weapons. And I think I would personally prefer it where I could more easily swap between using the two, where it's like one button press, you know, shoots on the triggers, and then one presses, you know, cast the spell. If it's only going to be 2 actions that you can do, I think that makes more sense. But there could be some value to, you know, basically requiring the player to basically swap over between weapons and magic, and the delay time between that as well. So, but yeah, it seemed pretty cool. I really enjoyed it from what I played. I talked to the guy a little bit about, like, aesthetics and, you know, what a game that is, like, looking like a PS1 aesthetic, you know, means, and why you choose that. And apparently the game is originally a Nintendo 64 aesthetic, but he changed it after people kind of said they would prefer PS1. And I think most people look more fondly on PS1 versus the Nintendo 64. Nintendo 64 just has some weird quirks to it that don't hold up well on a modern display. And even back then, I think on the CRTs, I think it was pretty clear that a lot of those textures were, like, really blurry. But, you know, I think, you know, I think, like with any kind of visual decision, it's going to be, some people are going to prefer one over the other. But I think the PlayStation 1 fits more in that, like, crisp emulated look kind of thing that people like, dithering maybe the one aspect of PS1 games that people don't like so much with that. But we talked a little bit about that, and I was trying to kind of gauge what he was trying to get out of that game from a visual perspective, and we kind of inevitably hit the discussion of, like, nostalgia. And I think part of it was my fault, because I think I did use the word nostalgia at some point. And I think whenever nostalgia is introduced to a conversation as a way to, like, justify why you like something, I'm not saying it's wrong, and I'm not saying there's no value in that, but I think a lot of times when we use the word nostalgia, it kind of covers up finding the real reasons why we decide to do something, or why we'd like something, or why we would make a choice. Because I think we just kind of say, well, it used to be how I liked it, or it's like how I used to play, so therefore I like it, kind of thing. And I think there's more of a discussion to be had there rather than just, it's just nostalgia. That's not to say nostalgia can't be the thing, but I just think it is a umbrella term that covers a lot of things where I think it's better to kind of, like, grind down a little bit further into that. And I don't know if we really got to that part of the conversation. But as I said earlier, I think one of the things that I took away from it was the fact that I think the aesthetics really fit the gameplay style and setting the expectation of what that game would play at. Like, because that generation of games in general, you know, the controls of those games are very different from a modern game, right? And while this does play like a third-person shooter, and so the controls are very clear from the start, which I think is one of the nice things, is, like, you know, you sit down, you play it, and you know what buttons do what. I think the thing is that the way the game feels and how you play the game is different, and that's what's important, really. At the end of the day, a lot of times the button configuration stuff, I think, is less important in those kind of older games, if you're really talking about older games that have unique and different gameplay styles because of their controls, kind of thing. I sat down on a booth for a guy named Lost in Space. Sat on his booth. this guy made... I can't find words, apparently. Lost in Space is the name of his video games, based on some old TV show. I don't know what Lost in Space is as a TV show. It looked like an old TV show. But the actual game looked pretty good. He kind of described it as like a Telltale-inspired... adventure game, and it definitely feels like that. I've only ever played Tales of Monkey Island on the Wii, and I really enjoyed that at the time. But it's got, you know, that kind of thing of walking around and solving puzzles, and every little bit of dialogue has this, like, little quirky, you know, sense of humor to it and stuff. And that also is, like, how you get puzzles, hints and things like that, is interacting through the environment. So it's like funny dialogue with information, right? That's kind of what I feel like those games are about, or at least the comedy based ones are funny dialogue with info. How do you pair them together in a way that makes sense to the player? And I think they did a really good job. I think it looks great as well. I only played the opening segment of the game, which is kind of this little tiny room where you're kind of, like, tasked with, like, combining these different crystals to escape the room, kind of thing. I think it was really smart use of this little space. I had a little bit of trouble with some of the puzzle solving, but I was talking to him pretty extensively during that demo, so it was kind of hard for me to pay attention to exactly what was happening and really think through the logic of what I was doing. So I think, while I did have some hiccups, it was more of the environment, not so much the game itself. But visually, it looks really nice. This is one of those cases where somebody, I think, is using AI in an interesting way, because apparently, this old TV series, he has the rights to use the dialogue from it. I don't know if he has the raw recordings or has a way to cut out the recording. So pretty much, as far as I'm aware, all the characters in the game are utilizing dialogue from the TV show, which I have no idea how you write around that. I'm curious, like, if it's noticeable. I did not notice it in person, but I was at a demo on a stage floor, kind of thing. But the main character is some kid. And from what I understand, what he was telling me is that the kid's dialogue is... I believe there is dialogue from the show in there for the kid. But the reality is the player, you know, he needs to talk about the world and talk about these individual, what are they called? Puzzles that you need to solve and give hints and stuff. So he used AI to do those lines based off the actual, you know, voice from the show. I think it's like a show from the 1960s. So I assume this dude who is the voice actor for this is long since old or nearing death. anyways, but what's kind of interesting about it is I think it was not as noticeable versus most other instances I've heard of AI voices kind of replacing voices in games. And I wonder if part of it is because the kid is a child actor from, like, the 60s or whatever, And I feel like the delivery of kids at that time as actors is very flat. And so it sounds off already in the first place. So when you introduce an AI voice that learns off a voice and doesn't have the dynamic range of like an adult character in those series or, you know, kid voice actors of today, or maybe an adult woman doing a voice for a kid kind of thing, right? I think it actually works pretty well in that one particular situation. I think most of the times you can kind of tell when an AI voice is an AI voice. I'm not going to say always. I'm sure it depends on the tools you're using and the amount of learning you do with it and how long you let it try to generate a profile and how many versions and if like a human intervenes and chooses like the best version and things like that, right? So I thought that was kind of interesting. But it seemed pretty cool. I don't know if I'll play it. I haven't really gotten into like those kind of point-click adventure games in a long time. I feel really good about my experience with Tales of Monkey Island, and I never really felt the need to do more. Grim Fandango I picked up, and I still today don't have a lot of want to play Grim Fandango. As much as I like the look of that game and the style of it, there's not a lot of drive for me. Zack and Wiki on the Wii, same kind of deal. I just haven't really sat down and really engaged with it. So it was a really cool game, and I thought it looked really nice, and it's a one-man team making this game, and it looked really clean as well. So but it sounds like he's trying to talk with the publisher at the moment, so I hope that works out for him. Ricket. This is like a JRPG where you're a bunch of kids running around town. I think the easiest thing you might say is that sounds a lot like Earthbound. The developer seemed unhappy with that comparison, and I get it. Like, one thing I was talking about with the Gunmetal Gothic guy was I was trying to just kind of get an idea of what games he liked from that era, just to get a feel for what kind of games he kind of pulled inspiration from. But and I think that's valuable to know what somebody played, so it kind of puts in context, you know, what they're trying to do a bit more, and I think there's value to that. But I think the problem is, and I've been guilty of this before as well in interviews and stuff, where if you say, are you inspired by this particular game, people think you're just making a clone of something, right? And so I didn't specifically say Earthbound to him, but I was just kind of trying to feel out what he was comparing it to, and he got a little snippy about Earthbound for a little bit. It does kind of look like Earthbound, but aesthetically, I think it has a lot more of a cutesy style to it. The animations are really, really cute. I just played the free mode, so I just kind of walked around town and beat stuff up. It has like very Paper Mario kind of battle system stuff, so I think there's a lot of really nice stuff with like the dialogue in particular. I think it just does a good job of kind of capturing that like kids TV show with like a bunch of really awkward kids. I thought it did a really good job of that, and visually just looked really nice too. So I don't know if I have much more to say about that. It is kind of like a JRPG where you just walked around town. Well, I should say the free mode was. I'm sure the main story demo or whatever would have been it. But I think the demo was like an hour long. I'm like, at a convention, I don't want to be sitting at your booth for an hour unless I'm talking to you. I don't want to be playing a game for an hour at a convention. So that's just not my idea of a great time. Again, if I'm talking to you, great. I would love to talk to you about your video game. But this guy, he kind of was like coming and going. And so I kind of was like, yeah, I probably won't be able to get to talk to him much. But, you know, at a convention, he's busy. And then the last game, I don't remember the name of this game, and I don't have a card. So I guess if you're somebody who's demoing a game at your booth, I just want to give you this feedback potentially. I'm not saying this is true for everyone. This is just true for me. If I don't have something to like take back from your game with me that has your game name on it, there's a very good chance I'm going to forget what your game is. So this guy had a QR code, and I think I scanned the QR code, but I don't, it's on my phone in like 8,000 tabs that I never close, right? So like I don't really remember what it is, but it was like kind of a 1v1, 2v2 hero shooter, but it was kind of interesting because the hero shooting mechanics were kind of separated out. So like your player character was like the Call of Duty loadout kind of guy. You select your loadout, but then you have a pet, and your pet is what determines your abilities and stuff. And so you have to be considerate of your pet's location and things like that on the map. So it was pretty cool, but the demo wasn't doing competitive at all. I did talk about the player base with him. He said there is a fairly decent size player base considering the scope of the game, but you know, again, I imagine trying to get a shooter populated is hard, but it's a 1v1 or 2v2 game, so you just literally need one other person to play it. So I thought it was pretty cool overall, but I think there's a lot of things that can be cleaned up probably regarding the pet. It was really hard to read where your pet was and what they were doing. I felt like most of the time I didn't even know if my pet was summoned. He was like, oh yeah, you can tell by looking at this little orange square that your pet's out. And I'm like, that's just not clear enough. And I did try to communicate that to him. It's the hard thing when you give feedback is like, you don't want to tell them how to fix it because they're the game developer and they need to figure it out. But you just want to try to convey like, oh, this is the, I don't know what my pet's doing. And they try to explain it and you're like, yeah, I can see that. But I still don't really know what my pet's doing. So it's one of those things that I think it's just hard to communicate that stuff. So anyways, I love those kind of things. I love sitting down and talking to people about their games at their booths and like what they're trying to do with them. I feel bad because most of the time I'm probably never going to play them. And then, you know, from a content perspective, really, like, I'm not going to cover these in any way that it's going to get meaningful exposure to anybody. But, you know, as long as they're willing to give me their time, you know, I my hope is that they're just excited to have somebody talk about their game and I'm excited to talk with them about their game and I'm excited to hear them talk about their game. So I hope it's a mutual thing and not just like this guy is sitting down asking 8,000 questions. Will you buy my $10 video game in 6 months? And the answer is probably no. But Pizza Bandit, I think I will. Gunmetal Gothic, I am interested in. The problem is that most people I would play Gunmetal Gothic with, unless it's like dirt cheap in the first place, probably going to wait for a sale. That's, you know, an issue with PC gaming in general of just like waiting for a sale. I think it's just kind of part of the culture of PC gaming in some ways. So anyways, Steam spoiled people, which I've seen videos about that, like how that's a problem. I don't really know if there's ever been any like studies to say like what that does to somebody's actual income or not. So for a game. So anyways, thank you so much, Level Up Expo, for your time and effort. I don't know why I said thank you so much. I think the reason why is because we're about to go into our new unexplored Ko-fi segment where we don't know what's happening. We don't know what the world's doing with us anymore. We have been abandoned by Jillian's questions. it's perfectly fine, Jillian. Thank you again for your questions and support. I'll make this the last week that I thank you for your questions again, because I feel like I just keep doing it over and over again. But yeah, thank you again for that. But anyways, so Ko-fi, things have not really been going up that much on Ko-fi, so I don't really have much to offer you guys at the moment. If there's anything you want, let me know, but it's hard to really justify making content for there right now. That's like specifically for there. At least I like, yeah, it just doesn't make any sense right now. Maybe someday, but not right now. Demodori, supporter this month. Thank you so much, Demodori, for your contribution. And hopefully I'll make a video sometime soon after this podcast. My hope is to go work on a video script again. I haven't really had the chance to do it, unfortunately, the last few weeks. So I'm sitting down, hunker down, and try to get a video done. Trying to recontextualize some videos, I think. I think I want to kind of reposition them in a place that I think would make them more a broad appeal rather than just what I was trying to do with them before. So we'll see if that actually works out. I'm perfectly fully expecting it to get like a couple hundred views and that's about it, unless I really figure out how to get it to catch people's attention. You never know. The Xeno panel actually got like 200 or so views, I think, on YouTube. How many people actually watched it's another thing. But I think that actually did way better than I thought it would on YouTube. But anyways, one thing I wanted to do, I don't know if this is necessary. It's not really connected to Ko-fi, honestly. So we're kind of talking about it, but we had questions in the Ko-fi segment here before. So, but I recently had a Twitter, what's it called? Or intervention where with myself, I do this thing on Twitter and I don't like it where I'll go and like, there'll be an annoying news story that day. That's like, I don't like that people are talking about this way. And then I'll go and put my thoughts out there and be like, hey, I think the way we're talking about this is kind of dumb. We should talk about it this way instead. And I don't think it does any value for anybody. I don't think it gives anything. And I don't think it does anything for me. And so it feels like I'm just kind of like talking in the echo chamber of like, hey, this frustrates me. And it feels more like venting. So I was like, well, what can I use Twitter for that would be valuable for my life? Well, there's other things as well, like communicating with the Itokodol community and stuff like that. I love doing that. But what would be the way I can use this from a gaming perspective that is not like, you know, connecting with different community members from other communities and things like that, right? And the big thing I thought was like, hey, maybe I can ask some questions on Twitter whenever I think about something I'm curious about, right? So I have a bunch of them here. I don't know if we'll go through all these today, but I thought I'd just kind of talk about, hey, here's the question I asked, and here's like the general response I got. I'm going to try to link the tweet threads for these because I didn't really tell people that I was going to be using these on the podcast. I don't know if they want their names attributed to things. So I'll keep it generic for now. If this ever revolves around Kofi specifically, I don't know. This is only coming up in this section because questions. I'm moving on. Let's stop talking about Kofi. Let's just go into one of these questions. Sorry, my brain is... I feel like I'm having a brain problem today. Maybe my nose smashed into my brain. do you think there's an issue with people coveting import and obscure games without actually bothering to play them? Again, this is a question I asked on Twitter. The reason I brought this question up, and it's kind of interesting. Sometimes people will try to figure out like why I'm asking a question because like, oh, did this thing happen? I'm like, actually, no, something else prompted this. Where one of the speedrunners I follow was kind of lamenting the a video essay around Steamybot Chronicles. Steamybot Chronicles? Bumpy Robot? What the hell is that game called? Steamybot Chronicles? Is that what it's called in the US? And the Japanese name is Bumpy Rot or something like that. Bumpy? Something, I don't remember. It's the game where you play as a robot or a guy in a robot. But they're like weird construction robots and stuff. It's an interesting game. People liked it a lot. I knew somebody who was really into it for a long time. I think it's is there a PS3 game or did that get canceled? I don't remember. Anyways. But this is a kind of a pretty niche RPG for the PS2. And so they're kind of like lamenting the fact that like people are going to watch that video essay and then not actually play the game. I've kind of felt this way sometimes as well with like certain games where people will be like, oh, I'm really excited that you covered something. And then I'm like, oh yeah, you should check it out. And you should play it. And like, eh, and I'm like, okay. and I think sometimes we often, I think maybe the danger of that to some extent, and I'm in the same boat here to some extent, is that we kind of like elevate certain games higher and higher the longer we wait to actually engage with them, right? I think Dear My Son is one of those games for me for sure. But when I got responses for this, weirdly enough, a lot of it was focused around buying games specifically, basically the idea that like buying games not to play them. I didn't really intend for that. I don't know if I have any real thoughts on that, but I thought that was interesting that that was where the conversation went. It could be just, you know, the type of followers I have, which it seemed like from a buying games perspective, it seemed to be kind of more focused on as long as they appreciate the game, they were okay buying a copy and not playing it or something like that. Whether that be, you know, playing it on a different platform or at least, you know, having an interest in it. I think a lot of the, if it was like, well, whatever people want, right? As long as people are happy with their decision that they made. And again, I think for a physical product on a shelf, that's fine. I don't really have, that wasn't really the intention of this question in the first place. So I don't know if I worded it wrong or what. But there was one response I got that did kind of engage with it more on that level that I was expecting. I think the thing that I kind of took out of the conversation is I don't know if I really, I think even the responses I got maybe didn't necessarily, give me what the response I was thinking, but, I'm just stumbling over these words. I'm sorry. I feel like maybe I have this feeling where people don't play a game, so I'm like, well, why aren't you engaging with it? And so I think sometimes that can be confused as like gatekeeping or clout or something like that. But I think my big takeaway from all this, sorry, I'm stumbling over my words, is I think I actually do a similar thing where I will not play certain games, but learn about them through other people. But it's the opposite for me where I do that with, I don't do that with obscure games. I'm usually the one playing the obscure game, but I will learn about games like The Last of Us 2 from other people or other big franchises. And unless I feel a specific need for myself to go in there, I will just let other people like consume it and then kind of convey what they like about it, right? And I'm happy to do that with larger scale franchises. And I think that's one thing I hadn't really thought about before is like maybe the reason why people kind of watch these video essays about these kind of older games and don't necessarily engage with them is that they like the like what we learn from those other older games, but maybe it's a harder time finding the drive to play something that might be older or more obtuse or something like that, right? Like, so we can appreciate it in this kind of more safer space that's away from kind of the challenges of playing those games, right? And for newer games, it's not really so much a challenge as for me in terms of like, the games themselves, but it's the time commitment that I'm trying to avoid. So I wonder if that's like a similar thing for other people, like time commitment, and then also avoiding having to deal with these kind of like outdated concepts and stuff and be able to stick with playing modern games where those things have been kind of, smoothed over, or modern releases of those games or things, those kind of things have been smoothed over a little bit. Speaking of which, do you prefer to play remasters on modern consoles, even if they come with compromises when compared to the original? When I got the response for this, I think most people played the original, unless there was some experience that really changed the game, whether it be new content or some new quality of life feature and things like that. And then also if it's like a massive increase in accessibility. So like, is this a portable game now versus previously it being a non-portable game? I think about this a lot because, maybe I shouldn't say I think about this a lot, but I think there's this ongoing conversation that was happening for a while where, people were posting, the Final Fantasy X HD remake and PS2, graphics comparisons, and the Xenoblade stuff came up. And then it really was just opening up this conversation of like, what's lost in these HD remakes as they get pulled forward. And unfortunately, I think a lot of times people go like, oh, they were just like lazy and couldn't afford to do it or something like that, right? And I think there's probably some truth to the fact that, ports and remakes of older games, HD remakes and stuff, probably don't have the budget to, that the original game had, or at least the attention to detail that the budgets allowed them to have. It's probably something that's a little bit more of a quick, faster job kind of thing. You're not really building a video game. And I've wondered about this with like character faces in particular, because like Xenoblade has this and Final Fantasy X has this, where there's usually a pretty significant update on the characters' faces. And I wonder, I don't know with, this is me, video game fan fiction right now, video game development fan fiction. I wonder if like the structure of a character's face changes between the HD remake and the original. And so the mapping of like the facial expressions don't apply anymore, or they might not be as appropriate for the faces. And so what happens is you get a lot more stiffer face animations because of that. But I think I've seen some arguments, I believe before as well, with like Xenoblade in particular, is that Xenoblade's a game that was running in like 480p or 480i on a standard definition display. So those smaller kind of facial animations, maybe the intent was to kind of bring them out more so they're more clear on the screen. I don't necessarily know if I agree with that, because when you go look at games on the screen, especially when we're getting close up to character faces, you can see them perfectly fine. So yeah, it's one of those things that like, I think, a lot of these questions I'm going to have on Twitter are going to be more skewed towards people within my circle, and so I'm going to get a lot of responses, people playing the original versions over the HD re-releases and stuff. I think the more mainstream cares more about the HD re-releases and things like that, but or at least that they're perfectly fine with that and they're not going to notice the difference. I mean, if you don't put those games side by side, I'm not going to notice that the character expressions are less, right? So we'll see. I felt like I stumbled through that pretty hard, but I have a bunch more here for next time, so maybe we'll look at that more. If I find that I'm not really getting anything valuable out of sharing that stuff, or if you don't find it, let me know. we'll see. I have like 10 or more that I asked, and I have some feedback from those as well. So we'll see what happens. Let's get into some news. Mostly financial news we're wrapping up here with, basically Square Enix and Konami stuff, or not Konami, Koei Tecmo stuff. We're going to start with Square Enix. You probably saw this news story. It went around quite a bit. Square Enix basically canceled multiple of their HD titles, which, obviously their mobile games are also in HD. But really what that seems to mean is console games. So games made for traditional consoles. Most of these games, I believe, as far as we can tell, were not announced. That doesn't 100% mean that's the case, but I don't think they've announced anything specifically getting canceled at this point. And, I don't think they're going to cancel, like, a Kingdom Hearts game or something like that, right? I don't think they're going to do anything like that. But this is all kind of coming out of that whole end-of-year report last year where they were like, hey, all of our kind of mid-tier console games, ultimately didn't make a profit overall. Obviously games like Babylon's Fall and Balan Wonderworld and stuff like that did significantly worse. That was not last year specifically, but those kind of games, The Quiet Man, all those kind of stuff. I'm always kind of the mind is that like if you want yourself a Harvestella, you gotta take the Balan Wonderworlds of it as well, because these games are on a budget and I'm not saying you can't make good video, or like those games were necessarily designed in the smartest ways at times. I don't really know what happened in the game development, but I think every game is at risk. And, you know, the smaller scale the project, the more and more willing I think you should be to let those games kind of release kind of as is without going through a ton of like market testing and cleanup and stuff, which I think is what makes those games special in a lot of ways, because they don't focus so much on like what is the most marketable thing at all times. But it seems like we're probably moving away from that, at least in the console space. They said they're really going to focus on kind of making their large scale AAA IP being the focus. There's some new stories going around about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth not selling as well as they would hope. But, you know, it is a PS5 only title right now, and the install base for PS5 is significantly lower than, you know, Final Fantasy VII on PS4 and the PC release of that as well. And that and like I think Final Fantasy VII, the first, I forget, is it just called Remake? Is it called that even? I don't even remember. That came out like around the time COVID happened. So I think that got kind of the COVID bump that we saw a lot of in the game industry. So yeah, but I mean, I think I saw a quote from them out there saying that basically the, that they're happy with the performance of that game and stuff like that. So from a gameplay perspective, and over time, I think they'll open it up, kind of thing. And you know, it'll come to PC at some point as well. So, but yeah, I think it's just kind of the end of that kind of like HD console mid-budget game from Square Enix. I'm curious if that includes live service games. Foam Stars is a PS5 HD console game. So will we still see games like Foam Stars on mobile? Like, is that still in the question? I don't really know about that. And I'm perfectly fine if that's the case, that those games only appear on mobile for the most part. I would prefer them to be on a console, but, you know, I get it. But yeah, I hope their live service game space, and I hope their mobile game space stays interesting and lively. I wouldn't be surprised that doesn't happen anymore, but I don't think there's been any specific suggestions that won't be happening going forward. So I don't think they've made any kind of comments about their mobile game space that much. Koei Tecmo, speaking of mobile games, I mentioned last week, I think, that they had saw a significant increase in mobile game revenue. Specifically, and they are, I believe, in their reports, yes, they said that they are, quote, highest sales since 2009. I don't have the exact article open here, but that's what it says there. So, you know, they're at least seeing a lot of traction in the mobile game space. But what's kind of interesting in this is that the console games didn't perform as well. But they did say that they want to continue to stay committed to console games and investing in console games and stuff like that. So it seems like they're not coming out of this investment meeting saying that, like, oh, mobile's the future for us. Rise of the Ronin apparently did very well. And it also, most of the success from the mobile game aspect seems to be related to Nobunaga Ambition mobile games specifically. So I think there's like three games in that category, and I think all of them did very well. I did see an article, I think, 2 weeks ago or so that said the Atelier mobile game did not perform as expected, though. So it's really interesting with like stuff like Nobunaga's Ambition, right? That is a very specifically Japan-centric franchise, and maybe it's a similar situation as like Konami, where they are incredibly successful with their current lineup that they have, but it's very Japan-centric, and so it's interesting to see this kind of franchise be kind of the driving force of Koei Tecmo sales, more so than like Rise of the Ronin, right? This huge PS5 exclusive. I think that's kind of really interesting to see. I think it's interesting that they're still saying they're really committed to console games. Not that I'm saying that like they should transition away from them or anything, but I think a lot of times when you see that kind of thing where, like, you know, there is a significant disparity between mobile game and console game revenue, you'll see more of a thing suggesting that we're going to kind of double down in mobile games versus, you know, continue to make console games. It's all somewhere, like, a lot of this Koei Tecmo stuff, I feel like, has been reported on Automata Media. I'll put the most recent article on there, but I think there's been like 4 or 5 articles I've looked at over time about this. And one of the things we're talking about, the fact that like Koei Tecmo makes a lot of money from investment choices, basically. They have somebody who does a bunch of investment stuff at their company, and then they're like, oh, they're an investment company that does making games as a hobby kind of thing. That was kind of funny, so. And the last story here is everyone's favorite. Everyone loves an NFT, right? You guys loved NFTs, right? Double Jump Tokyo. They're running, I don't know how long they've been doing this for. They're running a monthly game performance, I guess like advertorial post on 4Gamer specifically. I did not find any other like source post for this. I could be wrong. But it seems like they're maybe just posting directly to 4Gamer through, you know, that kind of connection they have. If you don't know, Double Jump Tokyo is one of the most relevant NFT game developer companies in regards to, you know, the publishers that we're familiar with, Square Enix, Konami, Sega, all those companies. Double Jump Tokyo has been working with them on NFT projects. So what I thought was interesting is they're trying to basically put together kind of a similar to like the mobile performance charts and things like that, where you can get like the mobile game performance for Japan week by week. They're trying to do a similar thing, but with microtransactions, NFT transactions and stuff. I don't really know how to read that stuff, so I don't really know what that success means. You know, some of them are plus, some of them are minus. Who can say? But what did kind of jumped out at me was the games that were on this list, because they're basically five games kind of focused on this list. The first one being like Moto Dex. This is listed as number one. Again, I don't really know what that means, being number one, if it's just like the transactions happening or if actual income or something like that. But this is a basically kind of a behind the back, almost like Excite Bike looking motocross game, but unfortunately doesn't have like really any of the mechanics of Excite Bike in it, with like the tilting or anything like that, as far as I can tell. So I'm not quite sure what having an NFT does for this. It seems like you can buy different bikes and different outfits for your drivers, but I don't know if there's like different stats to make them race a little bit different. There was a trial version on their website that I tried you can do without like an NFT, and it basically is just some old game where you kind of like move your character left and right to dodge obstacles and stuff. So very, very simple graphical style, like PS1 runs in a browser kind of thing. So, but it's not PS1 in terms of resolution, but you know, just the low polygon kind of thing. So it's interesting that that was listed as number one, since it feels very cheap in budget and compared to, most of the things. Pixels, this is apparently a farming sim based around NFTs as well. First time I saw of it, it basically is just like a Harvest Moon Stardew Valley kind of game. It seems like maybe your crops and stuff have some kind of value that is connected to the blockchain or something like that. I don't 100% know how all these things, work. I just kind of like skimmed the website a little bit. Matrix, but spelt with a one, so it's MATR1X. This is a Counter-Strike-esque shooter. I have no idea how NFTs play into this, but it's basically like a low-budget Counter-Strike game. I saw they had some tournament plays on their website. Mostly it was Chinese speaking, as far as I could tell, so I think maybe it is a China-based game. I don't know for sure, or at least that seems to be where the player base is. Well, I guess China plays a big role in esports in general, right? I think they do. I don't know. But anyways, it sounded like it was Chinese, mostly for the esports stuff. Yeah, it just kind of looks like a low-budget Counter-Strike, but it seems like it plays perfectly fine. It's just kind of the visual polish of it is where I think things seem to lack the most. Play Ember. So this is kind of cheating in this case, because when they list Play Ember, they say Play Ember casual games. This is not one game. This is a large number of games that fit in the casual space. I assume, you know, when you think of Candy Crush and things like that, Temple Runner, things like that as well. The two I have noted here is you have Bitcoin Runner. Basically, it's kind of a runner. I think he plays like the NFT monkey guy and you collect Bitcoins. And then also there's Bitcoin Pusher, which is, you know, pushing Bitcoins. And both of them say you can earn Bitcoins through playing. I'm going to guess that's a very minuscule amount kind of thing. But, you know, looked like basically those kind of, you know, the games you'd expect those to look like, kind of thing. And the last one was Ender's Gate, which basically seems like a Magic the Gathering-esque card game as well. I assume the cards are NFTs. I don't know for sure as well. So anyways, I just hadn't really seen what would be considered, quote, successful NFT games, at least from Double Jump Tokyo's perspective, right? They have a lot of investment for people to look at this industry positively, so I'm not saying these are successes. They're the ones running this list. They're the ones reporting these transactions, and I'm assuming that they are doing so in a way to help instill confidence in that industry, right? So, but just to kind of see that, you know, what would they consider to be the big successful games? And as far as I can tell, I don't think Double Jump Tokyo is the developer of any of these games. I think they just have a lot of money from working with a bunch of, well, I don't want to say a lot of money. I think they have a lot of influence at the very least from working with a lot of these big game publishers. You know, they're often on stage talking at these shows and stuff. If you remember last year, we're talking about like Bandai Namco and Konami talking about their relationship with NFTs and stuff like that. And that was an event, I believe, run by Double Jump Tokyo, or at least hosted the actual panels themselves. So So yeah, it's just kind of curious to see and what they are listing as like successful things. We're not going to keep up with this list unless a Final Fantasy game, or like if Million Arthur was not dead, if Million Arthur was on this list, then I'd be like, oh, maybe we should check in on this regularly. But Million Arthur is not on this list. It did make me question, you know, with Million Arthur shutting down, I don't know if that Symbiosis Genesis game that Square Enix is doing, if that's still going or not. I haven't checked in on it in a long time. That's not even out yet, I believe. It's just they sold the NFTs. I don't think they've done anything with it. And then Sega has their Three Kingdoms kind of game that's based off that arcade card game kind of thing. That thing, I went to their website recently, and I don't know for sure. It doesn't seem like it's out still. Also, there's a segment on the website that I believe is supposed to be for Warlord cards. So, you know, your iconic Three Kingdoms generals and stuff. And the section header for it says Woad Loads. And I searched and could not find any other situation they use the word Woad Loads. So I think they just have a typo on that webpage that says Woad Loads in the whole like section heading. And nobody's fixed it. So, and I don't know. I mean, that was announced years ago at this point. So I'm curious how long that's been there. I would be curious if I actually mentioned it on this podcast beforehand, but I could not find anything to suggest it was not an error. So yeah, it was pretty funny. Anyways, that's it for this week. Thanks for coming. WonderfulWord.com is the website. Like I said earlier, we got the PSP cleanup stuff coming up here. We got the panel that went up recently for Xeno, Star Fox podcast clip coming up here, as well as the gaming junk pile repair. PCFX fan club came out. A lot of stuff happening on the WonderfulWord Plus channel right now. Again, I'm not really like trying to make it a regular thing. So if it goes quiet again, it goes quiet again. I just happen to be doing a lot of things that it's like not hard for me to just turn a camera on for a little bit and just talk about it and not stress about it. If I don't want to do it, I won't do it. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. But anyways, thank you so much. And I hope you guys have a great week. Bye-bye.